Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
Kia ora and welcome. I'm Lisa Eyre, and this is Green Planet FM. Today I have in the studio with me Roger Fowler. Roger Fowler is from Kia ora Gaza, which is an organization bringing to our attention the plight of the Palestinian people, and also not just Gaza, the whole of Palestine. Because, you know, the Palestinians don't have a voice. They have no voice at the United Nations because they are not a country. So this is a major issue, and I think that it's one that we do well to explore. So welcome, Roger.
Yeah, kia ora, Lisa.
Kia ora. Now, can you tell me about Kia ora Gaza?
Yeah, Kia ora Gaza was set up from a series of public meetings throughout the country, but primarily here in Auckland, in the wake of the Israeli commando attack on the Mavi Marmara and the peace flotilla in 2010, which outraged people around the world, even here on the other side of the world in New Zealand. And it was a big wake-up call when that attack happened, resulting in the deaths of 10 civilian people on the boat in international waters. And, you know, people had to jump to the conclusion, wow, if the Israelis can get away with doing something like that in international waters against civilians, and obviously on a peace flotilla, what on earth are they doing to the Palestinians? And raise those questions. And we had big public meetings as to how we here in New Zealand could respond and get active in raising the issue of the Palestinian question and the Israeli occupation. And the result of that meeting, those meetings, was to form the group which we dubbed Kia ora Gaza, in other words, a friendship group towards, in particular, the Palestinians living in Gaza, who are besieged there, nearly 2 million people under a total blockade, land, air, and sea blockade, which is brought to the public attention with the that attack on that peace flotilla. And we decided to step up New Zealand involvement in the international efforts to end the blockade of Gaza and to join the next international action to try and break that blockade. And that came about in the form of a Viva Palestina land convoy of mainly ambulances and trucks, which kicked off from London in England in September of that year. And New Zealand, us here in New Zealand, we raised $100,000 to purchase 3 ambulances, packed them full of medical aid, and sent 6 New Zealanders over there to drive those ambulances as part of a convoy of nearly 150 vehicles.
And they got through?
We got through, yeah, we broke through. Okay, that didn't end the siege, but we pledge to keep chipping away and chipping away until one day our intention and hope is that that inhumane and illegal siege will be broken once and forever.
And were you part of that?
Yes, I led that mission.
Right, so you were driving an ambulance?
Driving an ambulance, yes, all the way from London right through Europe and Turkey and Syria. And eventually the ambulances and trucks were transported by ship to Egypt, and we drove up from El Arish, which is a port in northern Egypt, up to the Rafah border, and managed to cross over and deliver these ambulances and the medical aid. And we stayed about 3 or 4 days there, delivering that aid. Yeah.
Right, that's fantastic. So it must have been quite an adventure, really. Were you a little bit nervous going across into Gaza?
No, not nervous, exhilarated. The reception we got was completely overwhelming. It almost felt like the entire population had come out to greet us. We had to drive in convoy, all of these vehicles, all the way up from Rafah, which is down at the southern end of Gaza, up right through the enclave to Gaza City, which is near the north. A trip which might normally take, because Gaza is only a very small place, it's only 40-odd k's long and about 7 or 8 k's wide. And normally it might take, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour to drive that distance, but it took over 2 hours because it was just a thronging mass of very excited people. And we got the impression that even if we didn't have aid on board, that the welcome would be just as great. Because what that convoy said, it broke through the lies and the myths that the Israelis have enforced on the people there, that no one cares about Palestinians, no one gives a toss, we can do what we like. And just our mere presence, let alone the medical aid that we're bringing, expose that lie that people do care from all over the world, even from the other side of the world here in New Zealand.
Well, that's wonderful. Mm. Which year was that you went?
2010.
2010, so there's been intensive bombing again since then.
Oh, yes, there's been several big raids again. We joined another similar convoy in 2012. This one didn't go all the way from London. It was just from Egypt, from Cairo. But again, delivering medical aid. And there's been quite a few similar attempts, successful attempts over that period. But since then, with the change of the regime in Egypt, all efforts to try and get into Gaza from international groupings is actually impossible. It's almost impossible for people from Gaza to come and go, let alone internationals. So hence, we are still not giving up our involvement in international efforts to try and break the siege. And the sea efforts with the flotillas have persisted, and we've joined the peace flotillas. There's usually at least one or two each year. Since the Mavi Marmara, each of those boats has been hijacked, just the same as the Mavi Marmara and the other, there's six boats actually in that flotilla, hijacked in international waters, and the people on board arrested and taken to Israel and deported. We were involved in the flotilla last year, where we facilitated two journalists from Māori television to record that flotilla, and they participated in that. And similarly, their boat got hijacked by the Israeli Navy in international waters, and they were deported back home. This year, there's a special effort with a women's boat to Gaza, which will be crewed, and all the people on board will be women, including the captains and the crew. And most of the women on board will be prominent women from all around the world, including New Zealand. And Marama Davidson, the Green MP, has been selected to represent New Zealand on this mission.
Well, that's fantastic.
That is.
So where will the boat leave from?
It'll leave from southern Italy and travel across the Mediterranean. It could take about 6 or 7 days to reach Gaza, and it's the intention to reach Gaza. There's no threat whatsoever to Israel, and intend, as I say, to get through. And we call on our government to demand the Israeli authorities allow these boats safe passage.
I remember that first boat that went from Turkey. What did you say its name was?
The Mavi Marmara.
Yes, and that had sort of soccer balls for kids and building materials, because they've got no way of repairing their houses and medical supplies. What's this boat going to take?
There won't actually be much in the way of aid. It's just not practical on little boats to carry any amount of aid that's going to be of any great significance. The main purpose of this mission will be to reach out to the people of Gaza by boat, and like, it's a solidarity mission, if you like. The boats will be donated, but there won't be much in the way of content of aid on board.
Right, so it's making a point, really.
Yeah.
Yes, because after all, it is in international waters right up to the edge of Gaza.
Well, the Israelis have declared a 20-mile limit, but each of the attacks on the flotillas have been over 100 miles away from Gaza, that, you know, really in international waters in the middle of the Mediterranean.
Right. But this 20-mile limit, though, do they have a right to do that?
Well, that's arguable. Some people, such as our former Prime Minister Geoffrey Palmer, who headed a investigative project on that, he declared that it was okay. But that's one of the only decisions, international decisions, at which actually support the Israeli claim that they have the right to stop boats coming and going from Gaza. Most others say that it's illegal and obviously inhumane. It's a form of collective punishment. The people of Gaza, as I say, are totally besieged. Certainly nothing can come and go by water. And the borders are very strictly controlled, and there's very draconian restrictions on what can come and go. The Palestinians used to have their own international airport in Gaza and their own airlines, Palestinian airlines. That airport was funded by international donors, including the United Nations. The Israeli bombed it to shreds years ago, and there's no international airport. There's no way and ways and means of getting in and out of Gaza.
So I'm thinking, how can they repair the damage to the infrastructure, to the hospitals, or the one hospital, I believe? How do they repair all that when they can't get supplies in and out?
With extreme difficulty. There have been some countries, Qatar has offered assistance, assisted rebuilding hospitals, and as you say, yeah, there's more than one hospital, there's quite a few hospitals in Gaza. I can't remember the number, but they've many of them have suffered extensive damage. I visited the Al Shifa Hospital, which is the main hospital in Gaza City. Seeing the shell damage and the bomb damage to that hospital. Another hospital nearby, which catered for people with disabilities, was completely demolished in the last 50-day raids 2 years ago. Even ambulances have been targeted in the raids, Israeli raids on Gaza 2 years ago. There was something in the realm of 26 ambulances were blown up by and targeted by the Israelis. In response to that, Kia Ora Gaza here, we raised funds to sponsor replacement of two ambulances, which we did last year, as our effort, if you like, of international solidarity to try and rebuild in a little way some of that infrastructure which has been severely damaged. But it's not just hospitals and ambulances, it's schools, it's houses. Thousands of homes have been demolished or destroyed, and other infrastructure such as desalination plants and sewage plants and water services.
So they're very limited in the amount of power and water that they have per day, aren't they?
Extremely. There's a little power station there, which I also visited, and that can put out most Palestinians would be lucky if they have 8 hours of power in a day, and that's at random times.
How do they manage as an economy? How is it running at the moment?
With extreme difficulty. One of the highest rates of unemployment in the world, over 40%. And even those with jobs, many of them just are not receiving pay, and many of them are just volunteers. When we were there, the people who were acting as translators for us, they'd appear for at the hotels and that early in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, all dressed up, you know, the men in suits and that, and be with us all day and doing an amazing job. But in conversation, you find out that they're volunteers. You know, there's not only is there gross unemployment, but the so-called employment that they have there is disguised.
So how are people living if they have no jobs?
In extreme hardship. I ask this question, and you might find an extended family with many people in the family, and there might be one person who has a job or a job of some description. He or she might be a teacher or a medical person or whatever, and that a whole extended family would really depend on that one lucky individual to survive. But there's a large percentage of the people, the Palestinians in Gaza, who depend on handouts from the United Nations agencies in the enclave.
So Israel allows the United Nations inside the country?
Yes.
Well, it's a country.
Well, yeah, there's United Nations facilities, which, again, I visited, and schools. Which were heavily bombed also during the 50-day bombing raid 2 years ago.
It sounds absolutely desperate, quite frankly, in Gaza. What about Palestinians within Israel?
Yes, I don't want to give the impression that the Palestinians in Gaza are the only ones who are getting a hard time. The Palestinians in Israel could be called second class citizens or non citizens, perhaps, but especially in the areas of the occupied territory, Palestinian territories. We all know about the settlements which the Israelis are enforcing on those areas and the demolition of Palestinian homes and demolition of their farms and facilities, water tanks. It just goes on on and on, and it's got to stop somewhere along the line.
Well, I've seen a map of how much Israeli land and how much Palestinian land there was in 1946, and now it's dramatically reduced, and it's sort of reducing day by day. But there's other things going on as well as land being removed, isn't there, around water restrictions and things like that in the occupied territories?
Yeah, water's being stolen quite regularly. Traditional water sources that Palestinians might have had for many, many years have been taken over and diverted, and so water sources that might have been used for irrigation and for general human use have been diverted, and there's many stories of that water now filling swimming pools for the settlements which have been forced onto the Palestinian land.
Why isn't the international community doing something about this?
That's a big question. And the United Nations have passed, I think, hundreds of resolutions condemning Israeli occupation and excesses and abuses over many years. But and this is the most frustrating thing, is that our world leaders, although they wring their hands and pull out their hair and make all sorts of proclamations and condemnations, there's very little or no action to follow it up, and hence the work that like that we're doing with Kyoto Gaza and many, many other people from around the world. We see, well, if our leaders aren't going to take a lead and do anything about it, it's up to civil society to take a lead and to do what we can as citizens, as global citizens, to try and change this. Not just with the convoys and flotillas and the pickets and the marches and the protests and the petitions, but there's also a very strong boycott and divestment and sanctions movement, which is a very important vehicle to try and right this very real wrong. And it was through similar tactics during the apartheid era in South Africa, where the international movement played a very strong role in helping bring that to a head and to a conclusion, with this obviously supporting the movement within South Africa. To the extent that, we all know that with Nelson Mandela, who was painted as the world's worst terrorist and locked up in solitary confinement for 20-odd years, became one of the world's most respected leaders. And, just how things can change when people get together and take a stand for what's right.
Well, I think that was wonderful. But, you know, I don't think the world is such a civilized place anymore, because, you see, when you have leaders that might be considered terrorists, like Gaddafi, the way to get rid of them is to bomb them, to bomb their countries, to kill the leaders. And so how we manage to get around this, I don't know. I mean, do we have international pressure for there to be a two-state in Palestine and Israel, to actually have two states, because then the Palestinians would have a voice? Would that work? Do you believe in that as a solution?
I think things have got way beyond that possibility now. We talked about what we talked about earlier, how with the settlements, etc. It's not just a matter of settlements. It's also the Israeli regime have built enormous walls around what has really become, again referring to the South African situation, similar to the Bantustans, where people are isolated in little wee pockets. And not just isolated, but walled off by 25-foot concrete walls.
Oh, it's a Donald Trump solution, isn't it?
It is, yes. But these walls weave their way in and around and dividing off the Palestinian people and really making life almost impossible. And so you've got that situation in the West Bank. And you've got the enclave of Gaza, which is also isolated and cut off from the rest of Palestine. It's an intolerable situation, and to try and turn that into some sort of two states, it's just not going to work. Israel or what is historically Palestine, I believe, it is actually one state. It's an apartheid state. It's a settler colonial regime. And there's no earthly reason why the peoples who live there, the Palestinians and the Israelis, can't live in a democratic binational state just like any other civilized country. And people are working towards that as a solution.
I was talking to a young Jewish man yesterday, and he was saying, well, the problem is that the Palestinians, keep firing their sort of rockets that are a bit more like fireworks than anything else, or, and the throwing stones. And I think now you've got, in the West Bank, you've got people with knives, who will attack. And that is so understandable because of what they've been through. It's the way that some people have to respond. It wouldn't be my way to respond with violence, but you can really understand that. And so the more pressure that's put on the Palestinian people by the Israeli government, the worse that is going to get. So to actually ask them to live in harmony together is almost becoming impossible as well.
Well, there's a total imbalance. I mean, the Israeli regime is... some analysis have said it's about the fourth or the fifth strongest military might in the world. Now, Israel is only a tiny little country in itself. It's only the size of Waikato and Auckland provinces put together. It's tiny. But it's backed up to the hilt by the Americans and the American military and the whole military machine. They've got nuclear weapons, hundreds of nuclear weapons, which... you know, add to the imbalance in a big way, and all the latest firepower and technical military equipment that, that you could imagine to impose their will on not only the Palestinians but also on the region. And so to compare that sort of enormous firepower against, you know, a bunch of kids with stones or whatever is, and unfortunately this is the way it's often presented in the media, like there's two equal sides, or there aren't two equal sides. It's complete imbalance. The Palestinians have no army, they have no air force, they have no navy. You know, the imbalance is also of an extreme nature, and the impact of this that it has on the whole region is, I believe, is pivotal. Until the situation in Palestine until there's justice for the Palestinians and peace in the region, really there can be no peace in the entire Middle East. It's that pivotal. It's for historic and geographic reasons. And until there's peace in the Middle East, there can be no peace on the earth. And so that's why it's even more important that people around the world work together to try and resolve this situation as quickly as possible. It's gone on for too long, since 1948, the same time as the apartheid regime was imposed on the South Africans. Well, we managed to... again, collectively, to put an end to that. It's now it's time that the military occupation of Palestine was brought to an end as well.
Yes, well, I totally agree with you. It is a very difficult situation, and I, as a moderator on a couple of Facebook groups, sometimes I find some really anti-Jewish writing, and I say every time, this is not a Jewish issue. No. It's the Israeli government, particularly at the moment, Benjamin Netanyahu, who's the president. Mm. It's kind of something that where we need to kind of cause encouragement for the Israeli people themselves to be given the information so that they can say, hey, this isn't right, and vote somebody else in. Because I think the previous prime minister, whose name I forget, was actually less unpleasant to the Palestinians than the current government.
Mm. There's some very, very brave people in Israel, Israeli people, who are standing up to the regime. There's many, many young people refuse to be conscripted into the army, and they're taking a very strong stand. And that's part of building up the international support for justice in the region. Yeah.
Because I signed up to a website called Jewish Voices for Peace.
Yep.
And I really like that, because I like these people are really standing up. And the latest news from there is that there's a Palestinian who has been detained for 8 years now. Mm. For writing a poem. Mm. on the situation. So if a Palestinian writes a poem that's dissension, mm. They can be jailed. And yet Israel is supposed to be part of our Western ideals that are supposed to allow freedom of speech.
Yeah, that's the facade, and that's one of the many myths. And in fact, it's a brutal military occupation. And It's not a matter of Jewish or anything else. It's a colonial settler military occupation, and you know that sort of behaviour. You know, I think many of us thought it went out the window centuries ago. But that's what the issue is. It's not a matter of whether it's Jewish or not. The regime tries to portray that it's a religious issue, but it's not. It's a military occupation, and it's time that it ended, and it's time that Palestinians were able to live in peace and to have human rights just like anybody else, and including the poet you're talking about. There's 25 Palestinian journalists who are in jail in Israel at the moment, just trying to do their job as journalists. So it goes right across the board.
Right. Well, I think actually publicising the word, you know, apartheid is kind of important, because people in New Zealand will prick up their ears and say, oh, we oppose that. And then we can say, well, that's what's happening there. It's distressing. I watched a movie actually of the bombing and what was happening at Gaza Hospital. You mentioned the name of it,
Al-Shifa.
Al-Shifa. Mm. And seeing the suffering there. It's actually on Al Jazeera. You can find it. But be warned, because it's distressing. Yeah. And when you see that, you say, how can this still be happening in this day and age? Mm. It just seems so unfair that these people were completely defenseless, like sitting ducks. That prompted me to contact you, I think.
Yeah, well, I was there in 2012 doing it on a fact-finding mission for our website, kiotagaza.net. And it was during that time that another one of the Israeli military regime's attacks on Gaza took place, they've all got cute names for these attacks. It was called Pillar of Cloud. They all seem to have biblical connotations. But it was a ruthless attack. That one lasted 8 days. I managed to get out after 2 days, but I'm not a Palestinian. The Palestinians are literally like sitting ducks. They just have to cop it and survive the best they can. And that's one of the amazing things that you see in of the Palestinians, is their resilience is absolutely amazing. But it's being stretched to extreme limits. You know, the United Nations have declared that Gaza will become completely unlivable. We think it's unlivable now, but completely unlivable in 2020. Now, that's not very far away.
No.
Again, it's imperative that we do something about it. We just can't sit by and allow this sort of thing to happen. We thought apartheid in South Africa was bad, and it was it was brutal and horrific. But even the leaders of the movement in South Africa recognise that what's happening in Palestine is many hundreds of times worse.
Yes, and I don't see how it can change. It is almost like an attempt to exterminate a group of people. Almost an extermination program, would you say?
Well, to make life so unbearable that people are forced to move out. And, yeah, I believe that's what the program is really trying to enforce the Palestinians to move out, and many people are dying in the process. Like the last raid, so 2,200 Palestinians perished during that bombing raid.
Yes, but when you say move out, they can't get out, can they?
Oh, yeah, well, there's nowhere to go, yeah.
Mm. I mean,
but don't forget that there's an enormous diaspora of Palestinians living again in wretched conditions in refugee camps from the entire surrounding area, in particular Jordan and suffering in Syria with a double whammy in Syria and many other countries in the region. So there's something in the realm of 7 million Palestinians living outside of Palestine, and they have a right to return to their homes too.
If there's any homes left, yes.
Well, yeah.
Yes, so I'm always very interested, actually, in this idea of ownership of land, because the indigenous people didn't have that. They didn't put fences around places. They might have had territories, but it was much more fluid. And this whole thing of this is mine and I want it for myself, it causes a lot of problems.
Mm.
I was talking with a gentleman this morning about consciousness, about human consciousness, and the human consciousness somehow has to wake up from this idea that, you know, this is my individualism and this is mine and I want this and, you know, you can go away and we don't care. And it's almost like we've got to wake up as people and become more conscious of how it is for others, and not just say, well, I'm okay, so it doesn't matter. And I feel that this is why it's so important to look at our own country and look at other places and say, well, where are these human rights, this basic human rights that people should have? And if there is no basic human rights, then something must be done.
Yeah, well, it's a basic human right is to respect each other, and like historically, the area of Palestine has been populated, you know, again on the religious question on of people from the three great Abrahamic religions, and historically, by and large, those people have got on well and shared the land and intermarriage and neighbourliness and everything that you know, we recognise as being civilised and incorporating civil rights. So it's really the imposition of this. It's an ideology which is called Zionism, and which was adopted by some pretty powerful sort of people, and as I say, backed up by the Americans, which is abhorrent, just getting in the way of basic human values and human rights.
And of course, we've come out as a world very strongly in support of the Jewish people who suffered in World War II. Mm. And it's because of the world's compassion for the Jewish people at that time that we've kind of forgotten that we have to continue the compassion for others. I mean, I was, as I said, talking to a young Jewish man yesterday, and he was talking about how wherever the Jewish people went in the past, they were always rejected.
Mm-hmm.
So the harmony that many people had living together wasn't extended to the Jewish people, mm-hmm, in Europe and places like that. So when the idea of Israel as a state was mooted, then they all said, yes, we want to go there because we haven't been accepted where we were. And he was from Izmir in Turkey. His family were living there. And so they left Turkey because you had the Muslim-Jewish issue there a little bit. So it's certainly a very difficult problem because they needed somewhere to go, but how it's been done hasn't worked.
It certainly hasn't worked. And yes, it's important to fight for everyone's civil rights and human rights. And, you know, that should be the emphasis, and I think that's what we fought the Second World War for, is to uphold the human rights of people in those regions. And, just to sort of steal somebody else's land just because, you've got issues elsewhere is not the right way to go about things.
It's almost like a worldwide experiment of giving land back that hasn't worked. It's been an example as to how not to do it.
Yeah, well, you don't do it by taking somebody else's land, so you certainly don't. It doesn't work, and it...
Well, this is why the whole thing of land ownership is a massive problem.
Yes. Yeah, land should be shared, not... not used as a tool to move other people out.
Yes, so it's a whole consciousness that needs to shift as to how we view the world. Yeah, but that's a big question. So now your website is kiuragaza.net, and on there I believe that you can make a donation towards this flotilla that's going to be going in with Green MP Marama Davidson on board.
Yeah, let's talk a bit about that, because that comes back to, you know, what we can do about this situation, and really that's why Kia Ora Gaza was set up, to try to a vehicle that New Zealanders can be part of an international movement to for justice for the Palestinian people. And this particular mission, we're very optimistic about it. That granted, since the attack on the Mavi Marmara, as I said, when 10 people, civilians perished, there have been many similar attempts to break the naval blockade with ships, civilian ships. Each one has been thwarted by the Israeli Navy, and the people are arrested in the boats stopped. However, this situation can't go on forever and a day. No siege in human history has lasted for any very, very long time. One day it's going to crumble, just like the apartheid in South Africa imploded. And we're quite optimistic that this particular flotilla, which is about to take place in just a couple of weeks' time, will be the one that breaks the camel's back, so to speak. And Marama Davidson, the Green MP, has been selected to join that flotilla, along with a wide range of very prominent women from around the world. And our website does carry the information on how people can support that, and the support for this mission is growing very rapidly. We had a big multinational fundraising dinner just last week. Nearly 200 people turned up here in Auckland, and with strong support for this mission. People can see it as a practical way that we here in New Zealand can take a stand and do something practical to actually challenge physically challenge this naval blockade and bring the situation to world attention again. It's because the occupation of Palestine has been going so long, there's more or less people have come to accept it, and but it's unacceptable, and so it's important to keep raising the issues to attempt to do something concrete about it.
Well, that's fantastic, and of course listeners can do something concrete about it, because you can go to the kiuragaza.net and make a donation towards the flotilla, because you couldn't really find a better cause, really, to help those people who are suffering so much.
Yeah, so all that information is in the sidebar of the website, and we have a Facebook page as well.
Right, that's great. It's really great that you're doing that. Now, just a little bit about you. There's a lot of things that you stand for. You've had a lifetime of activism. Would you like to just tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I've been involved in what can loosely be called the protest movement, mainly against wars and injustice, going back to the days of the Vietnam War and the apartheid, anti-apartheid struggle as well. And it's from that activity that I've come to realise that these sorts of protest movements can have a very real effect on changing things in the world. I can remember, you know, when we're just a small, you know, bunch of students and ragtag bunch marching up Queen Street, and often we felt, gosh, this, you know, and getting arrested and stuff, and you can often feel, oh well, you know, this is getting nowhere, this is pointless, but we kept on plugging on, and we built up a massive movement here in New Zealand, and the same thing was happening around the world against that brutal war against the Vietnamese people, where over a million people died. And to try and force the government to withdraw the New Zealand troops from that war. And the first success I was involved in was against conscription. I myself was conscripted, and we feared that conscripts would be forced into that ugly war, just as what happened in America and what happened with Australians. As many hundreds of Australians died who were conscripts in that war. And we fought against conscription. We won. 1972, the government agreed under pressure to drop conscription, which felt like it had been there for many decades, and part of the framework here in New Zealand, and we pushed on and built up a big protest movement and mobilisations up and down the whole country, involving all sorts of people from all sorts of backgrounds, until eventually we. They built up the pressure for New Zealand to withdraw troops from Vietnam. Similar with the anti-apartheid movement. Similarly, often it felt, you know, a bit of a hopeless cause. Apartheid had been there, it felt like forever, and it was cemented in and strongly supported by all the big multinational companies and the Americans and everybody else. But we protested. But eventually it came to a head with all these international protests and efforts, and of course with the struggle within the country itself, that they just couldn't do it anymore, because it just became completely untenable. Same with Vietnam. They just couldn't do it anymore. The people who are conscripted into that war would rather shoot themselves in the foot and be sent home to a hospital back home, or just shoot their own generals rather than be involved in this war. The whole thing imploded. Same with apartheid. Same with nuclear warship visits here to New Zealand. It's little people getting together time and time again and building up a movement, until eventually they couldn't do it anymore. Even the government came on side, and the government sent like a frigate over to the where the French were conducting nuclear tests.
Mururoa, yeah.
Exactly. Same sort of thing. And now we don't have nuclear tests in the Pacific anymore. We don't have nuclear warships visiting our harbours anymore.
Well, we've got to be a little bit careful
we
there, because there
yes.
might be one in November,
yes.
and we are building a movement with Auckland Peace Action.
Exactly.
Auckland,
yes,
Auckland
I'm not suggesting
Action.
That you know that that the struggle ends.
Yeah.
That it often reoccurs, and so you've got to be vigilant. You've got to be prepared to get out there and to go through it all again. And we may be facing that situation very, very soon.
Yes, I've already interviewed Valerie Morse. If you happen to be listening on the internet, Green Planet FM, Valerie Morse, she will tell you all about what's happening with the Auckland Peace Action Group attempting to keep away any warships that could possibly be nuclear or have the capability of putting together nuclear weapons on board. And also there's a huge arms festival, expo. Why on earth do we want to sell weapons from New Zealand? I don't know. So there's a lot of work going there, and I've also been involved in all the things that Roger is talking about, and it turns out that we were at Teachers College together at one point.
So. Many years ago.
Yes. yes, it's a long, hard struggle, but on the other hand, I think, you know, that if we didn't ever, long-term protesters, if we never got anywhere, we'd give up protesting, but we do actually get places, and we still, and we must always be vigilant and keep up asking for this, but we do have the democratic right to give our opinion, which obviously Palestinians can't even write a poem, but we have that democratic right. So I want to make a submission on the maritime amendment bill, where they want to be able to arrest people who go out on the waters to oppose nuclear warships or drilling for oil. Yes, the appropriate committee is going to ring me from Wellington because I don't want to travel down there. So this is good. We do get a say.
Yes, and the different issues are interrelated. That's an issue of civil liberties here in New Zealand. Mm. And, so we've got to fight for our civil liberties as well as fighting for justice and against the war makers. And you're quite right. And we've got to, again, build up and get behind the protests which are being organised against this military expo and the new warship visits. Because these things are dragging New Zealanders into the war machine, and the more and more we get involved and implicated, the worse it's going to become.
And it's fantastic that the KiwiSaver was exposed as investing, because you can think, oh, this isn't our problem, just the same as you can think Palestine isn't our problem, but we're all humanity, we're all humans together. But the financial issue of the industrial military war machine is funded by people who have no idea that they have money in those investment schemes that are funding it. They don't realize they're supporting cigarettes or alcohol or weapons or even nuclear weapons, because nuclear weapons aren't illegal. There's so much to do as an activist, and Roger's obviously given a lifetime to that, and I've been in and out as I've brought up a family and run a business, but those are the things that we can do, and certainly thinking about the people in Palestine, thinking about how can we help these people, because there's very little that they can do without being killed or imprisoned. I think bringing the subject to the fore, talking about it, bringing it out into the open, is very important.
It's an international issue. It's a humanitarian issue, and we can't just look the other way. Especially, as I say, once you've been there, you and seen. The hardships and the atrocities of the occupation and the bombing, you can't unsee it. You can't walk away and pretend that it's of no significance. We have a human obligation to do what we can to rectify the situation. And we're talking about the warship visits and other issues like that. It comes down to the good old-fashioned question of people power. You know, when people get together and take a stand, things can start to change. And that's, we talk about our lifelong experience, going back to the Vietnam War days and apartheid, Māori land issues, and nuclear warship visits, etc. like that. People can, by getting together, make a real fundamental change, and I see it's imperative that we continue to do that.
So I hope that we have managed to transform all our listeners into being activists.
Yeah.
Because the world needs activists. The world needs awake, aware, peaceful activists who don't bring violence into what we do, but do more to create a peaceful, better place with good human rights.
Yes, and so, I think it's important to reassert that. Like the Women's Boat to Gaza is a totally peaceful mission.
Yes,
it has no intention to do anything against Israel or to even to visit Israel is no threat whatsoever. And but it's women making a stand together, you know, on behalf of the countries where they come from and the people that support them, to try and do something about the situation, which is far more than our world leaders are doing.
Yes, and so good on Marama Davidson for going, because it will be a bit of a challenge, and they'll be worried about what's happening and those sorts of things. So it's fantastic that we have her going from New Zealand and taking our message of Kia Ora to the Palestinian people. So, Roger, thank you very much indeed for coming in. It's been really great to meet you and to interview you. And, yeah, good luck with continuing on the good work.
Thank you, and all the best.
That was Roger Fowler talking with me, Lisa Eyre, for Green Planet FM. Now, Roger's website is kiaoragaza.net, and there's a Facebook page of the same name. And Kia Ora Gaza are pleased to announce that their New Zealand nominee, Green Party MP Marama Davidson, has been selected to join the International Women's Boat to Gaza Peace Flotilla. Marama will join other prominent women from around the world and international media personnel on this peaceful civil society mission to challenge the illegal and inhumane 10-year Israeli naval block of Gaza. The flotilla will accentuate the devastating effects of the cruel blockade on the 1.8 million Palestinians isolated in Gaza. You can go to the website kiaoragaza.net or the Facebook page and find a link to donate to this very worthy cause. They're trying to get $25,000 to cover the costs of flights, accommodation, and New Zealand's share of the purchase of the flotilla boats. This interview was brought to you by the Awareness Party. You've been listening to Green Planet on Planet FM. Join us at the same time next week, 8 a.m. Thursdays, or anytime online at greenplanetfm.com.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Oh, such a perfect day. You just keep me. Just keep me hanging on. Just a perfect day. Problems all left alone. Weekenders on our own. It's such fun. Just a perfect day. You made me forget myself. I thought I was someone else, someone good. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with. Such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on. You're going to watch your soul.
just what you sow. You're going to reap just what